A bit of déjà vu on agenda this week as the Bishop's vote is once more called into question, this time by the House of Keys, who narrowly voted to allow Laurie Hooper to introduce a private member's bill to remove the vote from the Bishop. Mr. Hooper was accused as having malevolent purpose and being distracted by trivial matters when he should be getting on with the day job of fixing health services. I had hoped to interview Mr. Hooper for this evening's programme, but sadly he was unwell and had to call off our chat. Get well soon, Laurie, if you're listening. We'll hear from the rather fiery Keys debate shortly, but first, back in June, I spoke to Joni Farragher, MHK, about her motion to June Tynwald to remove the Bishop's vote and suggested to her it was a timely moment to make this decision with the Bishop's retirement having been announced.
Yeah, that's right. And as you say, really, this is just kind of taking an opportunity that presented itself. I think we have so many complex, big issues facing us right now that perhaps constitutional, structural reform of the composition of Parliament, of Tynwald, is not necessarily at the forefront of everybody's mind. But this felt like it was an opportunity that had presented itself and that could, if it's the will of Tynwald, be resolved fairly rapidly with the fact that the Bishop is retiring and the Church of England won't be looking to appoint another one until, well, at the earliest, I guess, October. So if this motion is the will of Tynwald and does pass, I feel that that will bring us a step more in line with a sort of full democratic mandate of the whole of Tynwald.
And what would you say, I suppose, then to critics who would say, well, of course, if you do this, we will probably end up losing the historic role going back to St. Macleod of a bishop in the Isle of Man?
Yeah, and I take that point, and I think it's definitely a consideration. But for me, I guess what the Church of England does is sort of up to them. And if that is what they decide, that the diocese is not to be any longer, then I guess that's kind of their call, would be my view. But also, I think there's always some reason that some traditional reason that we can hold on to not progressing and not moving forwards. And I think we have to kind of weigh those up. Which is the most important? You know, do we value the sort of fundamental tenet of democracy in terms of that being the people's voice and the people electing who's in our parliament, or do we value the tradition of having a diocese? Which one is the most important to us, I suppose?
Other parliaments seem to manage, though, with unelected members, bishops and the like. I mean, why would we need to be so much more different, bearing in mind the bishop is only one of 33 in Tynwald, and effectively he doesn't tend to sway debates very significantly. He just adds a kind of a moral and spiritual dimension to debates.
It's interesting the way that you phrased that question there, Phil. So, first of all, how do we know that he doesn't sway? Do we have any proof? From what I think that if he doesn't sway anything, then okay, what's the point of having him? But first of all, but secondly, the fact that you've kind of added in that he adds a moral or a spiritual dimension, I don't think that any religion or anybody, any group of people in any way has a monopoly on morality. And I think that I personally, as somebody who doesn't have a religion, feel that it's important I have a deeply held sense of morality, and I don't need a religion to sort of tell me that. So I think it's quite important to remember that morality is not down to affiliation with any group or otherwise. It's your individual conscience and what you feel is important. And I think I have a lot of faith in the fact that if you stand for public office, you want to do it for the right reason, and you have a deeply held moral code. And actually, I personally feel like having a look at the start of Tynwald or at the start of the House of Keys at the Nolan principles would be a lot more helpful to a lot of us than taking a prayer to a God that not very many people in our society still actually believe in. And to me, it would feel like that would be more representative of people as well.
In terms then of the debate, have you got any indication so far as to whether you're going to get support from members?
No, but I haven't, to be honest. I think that a lot of people are waiting to see how the debate actually goes. I think that there will always be a sort of quite vehement group on each side. So I think there are a couple who are very, very strongly opposed to this. And then there are a couple who are very, very strongly in favour. But the vast majority of people kind of think, well, it's absolutely right that he shouldn't really have a vote, and we do want to improve democracy, etc. However, they don't necessarily want to offend people, or they don't want it to be taken to the point at which it becomes an issue for the electorate, or that they upset people. So I think that we're people are gauging opinion from their electorate, from their voters, I suppose, over this time. And I'm really looking forward to the debate. I really hope and I believe that it's going to be a respectful debate of all faiths and all belief systems, and that everybody can try and engage in it in a really sort of genuine way.
And if some helpful or perhaps mischievous, depending on your outlook, amendment arrived to your motion suggesting that, remove the bishop's vote, but allow him to continue to be part of Tynwald, would that be something that you could support?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately my goal would be to have the composition of Parliament as being people who were representatives of the people. And that, you know, Legislative Council at the moment are indirectly elected, so they still do have that mandate. However, appointees in our Parliament, to me, seems opposed to the fundamental tenet of democracy. So as far as I'm concerned, I would not like to see appointees at all in our Parliament. However, if it is the will of Tynwald, I think that, you know, there will be an amendment that to say that the role remains, but the vote is removed. That will be a small step forward. It's not as much of a step as removing appointees from the composition of our Parliament. But I think it would still be a small step forward that I would be, you know, pleased to have been part of.
Tynwald does have a habit of shuffling forward when it comes to constitutional reform, so perhaps a shuffle is better than a bold step.
Well, I mean, I think yes, a shuffle is always better than no steps whatsoever. I would agree with that. Personally, I'm all about the bold steps. So as far as I'm concerned, I would like us to take a bold step of saying we do not agree with the principle of appointees in our Parliament because it opposes democracy. And I would like to see us make that step. But a shuffle, like I say, is better than no steps whatsoever.
Joni's motion was lost, as indeed was the amendment. However, the Keys vote was sufficiently strong to encourage Mr. Hooper to put forward a short private member's bill to remove the bishop's vote. In moving his motion, Laurie Hooper explained his proposed bill would be very short, said he would hope to include the long title of the bill in Manx, the first time this would have been done in living memory, and urged members not to regurgitate their June Tynwald comments. Following Mr. Hooper's opening remarks and Mrs. Farragher's seconding, Rob Collister was first to speak.
I'm somewhat surprised that we're here again today discussing the removal of the Lord Bishop's vote in Tynwald and Legislative Council, especially when this item was only discussed in June this year, as the mover has just mentioned. The Honourable Member for Ramsey, as the current Health and Social Care Minister for the Isle of Man, is no doubt fully aware that his department and Manx Care are currently facing some serious issues around recruitment, retention and relevance. From a financial point of view, the Minister's full attention at the moment should therefore be around setting and delivering the long-term strategy to improve the Isle of Man's health service and social care service for the people of the island, instead of navel-gazing around the Bishop's vote.
Relevance.
I wish the Minister would just spend one lunchtime speaking to the people in Strand Street or Parliament Square in Ramsey, because most of them would tell the Honourable Member they very clearly don't care about the Bishop's vote. What they do care about is how the Honourable Member for Ramsey intends to improve health and social care services on the island, especially when we have 4,200 people wait to access an NHS dentist. Island residents...
Mr. Speaker, point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah, there is.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker. Standing order 3.33. No member shall digress from the subject matter of any motion under discussion. This is clearly a significant digression.
Yeah. Honourable Member Falcon has made his point about Mr. Dodd's interview.
OK, I'm happy to do that, Mr. President, but as I say, I think the Minister's attention should be on that. On behalf of speaking to loads of my own constituents, this is not a high-priority discussion point. Therefore, I will not be voting for the motion today.
David Ashford was the only speaker other than the mover to support the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, now for something completely different. I, for the first time ever, I'm probably going to take the Honourable Member for Ramsay's advice, and I will keep my intervention very, very brief. It is simply to say that over the years, there's many people who have tried various different mechanisms to try and bring this forward. I think this is the first time, as far as I'm aware, that it's come forward attempted as a bill. So actually, since it aligns with everything I've said in Timwell previously, I wish the Honourable Member well with it. And I welcome his confidence that it will progress. We'll soon know whether that confidence is well placed or misplaced. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
On the other hand, Chris Thomas was far from supportive.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I congratulate the Honourable Mover for congratulating Coach Vanin as the National Translator so much, so fulsomely. There was a time when I got to the front page of the local newspapers using Manx, and I referred to something that Minister Hooper had said was bochnid, which translates roughly as nonsense. But it's quite similar to a word that Tony Blair once used in Westminster and didn't even get punished for it. But it's a fair point. You know, Coach Vanin does do a great job translating the long title. Mr. Hooper's not quite right. We are systematically working back through previous legislation for our long title. So that was a commitment that we made to the Council of Europe. We have actually published long titles and significant parts of 5 bills, and we're working on 3 more as well at the moment, because that is important to actually have the legislation in our own language. And also just wanted to say that the long title could be changed during the course of the administration, but Coach Vanin would have no problem whatsoever retranslating the long title. In terms of further comments, and I will have to refer to my previous speech, unfortunately, the Honourable Mover has made an assumption about people's voting when he's been stating that the House of Keys expressed this field. Voting and my voting is becoming a bit of a theme today. But basically, between lines 4,475 to lines 4,480, I did say on the 20th of June very clearly, so in summary, I will be supporting the amendments for Mrs. Maltby and Mr. Speaker, but I will actually be voting against the motion at this stage. It is a safer bet to make sure, at least if we are going to have something decided today, it is more sensible their amendments than the alternative. But I'm a passionate believer in doing the job properly rather than quickly and hastily and living to regret the situation. So I do learn and change my mind, because I had voted differently in 2017 when this was previously floated. So I was one. I'm included in the 14, but I wasn't amongst the 14. Most people in this House actually subsequently voted against the motion. So it's not even true to say that Mrs. Maltby had an amendment passed, because the amendment for Mrs. Maltby was defeated. So we need to be very careful about the language. I just think the timing of this private member's bill is request for leave to introduce is, as somebody described it to me yesterday, malevolently opportunistic. It could be naive, he said, but it doesn't seem like it. It seems malevolently opportunistic. It's coming on just after the bishops retired and made detailed contribution and set up processes that's going on for a very important aspect that's been, that's an important part of our historical tradition and current processes. It comes the week after we had a Catholic co-cathedral celebration for a new bishop, at least a co-cathedral associated with the island. And what's more, so that's the second point to add, connected to this this request today. And the second point is that I can think of 5 constitutional innovations that need to be thought through properly that are more important than this one. So, for instance, the link between elections and governments and policies that emerge that the Chief Minister so coherently outlined last week in terms of the mandate for assisted dying. but also has other implications. The Auditor General and the Ombudsman are still settling in. That's number two in my list of five. Secondary legislation, primary legislation, how we consider it in committees, all of the bits that we're talking about today. LegCo voting on the budget, because I think as far as I can see, people's committee of the Chinese Republic that still have anywhere in the world have unelected members voting on budgets. So therefore that's another issue. And finally, the Speaker having to be political once a month to get re-elected quite worthily. There are five more important constitutional issues than the Crown and the Bishop. And I remember Jeremy Corbyn actually agreeing with that point of view, because even the most radical of thinkers, Mr. Corbyn didn't actually do anything about the Crown or the Bishops during his time for that very reason. You know, there is an important tradition, and then there's important public policy that needs to be settled, and we should be focusing on important public policy.
Hear, hear.
The two constitutional aspects I put down in my debate, I just remind people of. The first one is that we have one of the smallest chambers of a parliament on earth. We only have 9 members in it, which is very easily capturable by forces, and they do seem to have been a trend since the Legislative Council ceased to have the characteristic of an aldermanic bench, whereby democratically elected politicians try to capture the Legislative Council, and it's really easy to do if there's only 9 members of it, and it would be even easier if there are only 8 members of it. And secondly, it's absolutely daft to have an even number of politicians in a branch. It's much easier to have an odd number. And so they are profound constitutional issues that would arise from this consequence, and I won't be supporting the leave to introduce today.
Claire Christian also opposed the motion, as indeed did Jason Moorhouse and Tim Glover.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I shall keep my comments exceptionally short. I just wish to affirm that my stance remains unwavering since June, and I'm in alignment with the Lord Lisvain report, which concluded that there is no convincing rationale to eliminating the bishop's vote. Moreover, I find no justification to endorse the proposition of implementing a bill that would eradicate the bishop's voting rights.
Thank you. Mr. Moorhouse, Member for Aubrey Castlemullet.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This really does concern me. I will briefly focus on 3 points. The first is why. As has been mentioned already, we discussed the bishop's role in Tynwald quite recently, and as Mr. Thomas did suggest, it does look like opportunism. The second one is the concern that it risks destabilising the current process to find a new bishop. The Right Honourable Member has had 7 years to bring this forward, and it does look a bit late in the day at this moment.
Quite twice before, Mr. Speaker.
And finally, just in terms of the important things we've got to do, my good friend, Mr. Collister, really did highlight some key issues in the community that have been raised, and I don't want to concern Mr. Hooper over that again, but there are real issues in terms of priorities.
And fix them. I think I'll do my job, and everyone else can do their job, and we'll all get along just fine. Mr. Moorhouse, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. From my perspective, it's really a matter of ensuring that we can go forward to actually bring this in at this point is potentially destabilising. I believe the vote is important. It reflects an independent moral high ground. It's not going to be tainted by politics and the political thinking at the moment. It's actually got that longevity and history, and I think it's an important thing we retain. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Honourable Member, Mr. Glover.
Through my old order, I've just got 2 questions really to the mover, and that is, I think Mr. Thomas expressed it before, and I know, and I'll correct that, we've got 24 in here, which is an even number, but we are losing in a smaller chamber. That's the point, I think, that we're going down from 9 to 8 if we remove the vote, which does leave the chances of a split in a smaller chamber considerably higher. So just like comment on that. And also, has the mover looked at constitutional matters and whether a vote to remove the vote while we're at the moment waiting for the appointment of a new bishop, whether that will affect whether we have a bishop or not. So has he put that research in ahead of this? Because we are here as representatives of the people, and we still do have a majority that expressed in the census that they were Christian, 40,725 as opposed to 32,608 with no religion at all. So have we actually checked while we're in this position where we're without a bishop, whether we would indeed get a new bishop.
Finally, Mr. Hooper wound up the debate.
Firstly, I'd like to thank Mr. Ashford for his support and for Ms. Farragher for seconding the bill. And I'd also like to thank Mr. Ashford for keeping his remarks unusually brief. Turning to Mr. Thomas, the Honourable Member for Douglas Central, I would like to thank him for talking very positively about Culture of Annan's programme of work. The comments I made in respect of not translating the entire back catalogue were solely in relation to the outcome of this debate, not a reference to wider work that is ongoing. Unlike Mr. Thomas, I'm not a betting man, but I think there were a few of his remarks that I should probably address. Firstly, he stated that I had claimed the motion wasn't defeated. It was defeated in council, but not in the Keys, which is the entirety of what I said in my very short opening remarks. I would encourage Mr. Thomas to listen to what is actually said, rather than just misrepresenting the situation in his response. And I appreciate that it is very difficult to do this whilst at the same time trying to figure out which of the two brightly coloured voting buttons he should push, but I don't think that should be distracting enough to prevent him from listening to the debate itself. I do welcome his comments, though, about broader constitutional reform. I agree with him entirely. There are plenty of other things for him to look at, and I really do look forward to his motions and private members' bills coming forward in respect of some of those issues that he identified. As I said in my opening remarks, which I would again reiterate and encourage Mr. Thomas to have listened to, this proposal follows on very directly from the June debate, where the Keys expressed a wish through the casting of votes. Although, again, Mr. Speaker, I can't control Mr. Thomas being unable to differentiate between the green and red buttons. In respect of the timing of this motion, I asked the clerks to table this motion in the first available sitting following the assisted dying debate, at which there wouldn't be any more assisted dying debate. That's why it was coming here. I hadn't planned on the committee motion spreading out over an extra week, otherwise I may have decided to delay this an extra week. But I was quite comfortable that the Keys could deal with this issue as well as the committee motion today. I'm not entirely sure that malicious opportunism is appropriate language for the Honourable Member to have used, but it is disappointing that rather than tackle the issue at hand, he's decided to make this debate somewhat personal. Talking then, Mr. Speaker, to malicious opportunism and to making debates personal, I have to say I was extremely surprised by the comments from Mr. Callister, the Honourable Gentleman to my right.
Not Catherine Black.
It was quite embarrassing, I think, to have such a vehement admission of failure on the part of an Honourable Member. I certainly wouldn't be coming to this Honourable Court and admitting publicly that I couldn't work on two different things at once, as Mr. Callister did in his remarks this morning. It may interest Honourable Members to know that there are around 3,000 people working in the health and care system, all of whom are working hard to improve things for patients and service users. And despite the popular belief that the Minister is in fact not omniscient or omnipresent, and the overwhelming majority of staff are perfectly capable of working without needing ministerial direction at every turn. Given then, Mr. Speaker, that for 3 months last year I was in fact Minister of two departments simultaneously, with no noticeable decline in output, I might add, making up by myself nearly one quarter of the entirety of the Alamein government, I am confident that I can manage to deal with a two-clause piece of legislation without it impacting on the breadth of work going on across the health and care system. In terms of the remarks made by Mr. Morehouse as to why I'm bringing this forward, I think I've said that quite clearly following the debate in June where this House seemed to me to express a majority opinion. In terms of the process of appointing a new bishop, really I don't believe that's a matter for this Honourable House or for the Honourable Court of Tynwald. The appointment of the bishop is a matter for the Church, and just as I don't think the Church should have any say in how we conduct our business, equally I don't think it's appropriate for us to have a say in how the Church conducts their business. The appointment of a bishop for the Diocese of Soto Romani is very much a matter for the Church. With that, Mr. Speaker, I simply beg to move the motion on the order paper.
The motion on the order paper is that leave be given to introduce a bill to provide that the bishop shall cease to have the right to vote in Tynwald or Council whilst retaining membership thereof. In Manx Billiata Careil nach Bic Hair, Ekanaspic Arik Devotal, Ons Tinvel, Na Onsa Kunsel Slatasach, Akta Gine, and Altenus Ega Ju Areil.
The vote was won narrowly with 13 for and 11 against, which will allow Mr. Hooper to get his short bill drafted and brought back to Keys for consideration. What do you think? A necessary change to bring our parliamentary system into the 21st century, or unnecessary tinkering when there are more important things to be getting on with? Is the vote of the non-elected bishop any different to the votes of the other 8 democratically unaccountable LegCo members? Don't forget this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. For now, I'm Phil Gawne. Goramayo. Thanks for listening.